Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psochim Daf Mem Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formative introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Mem Vov. In the middle of the Omid, you will notice a Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with a situation of dough that you are not sure of whether the dough has become chometz or not. Botzek ha-cheresh. Cheresh literally is a deaf individual. In this case, the deafness is translated into the dough as being something that's unusual. Just like a deaf individual has and has no ability to hear what is being said, it's not clear when you look at such a person, it's not clear whether he is listening to you or not. So there's this element of doubt, of lack of clarity. So too, with regard to the dough in question, it's not clear whether it is chometz or not. It might be pointed out that, as we've seen in a previous sugya, that as the dough ferments, generally speaking, there are signs in the dough indicating its fermentation. Here we're dealing with a case where you don't know. The common signs aren't present. So the Mishnah says, Botzek hacheresh im yesh kayotze bo shechmitz, if there's another hunk of dough that was kneaded at the same time, and on that second hunk of dough it is noticeable that it has become chometz, so then hare ze osir, so this too will be forbidden. The Gemara now asks, what about a case where you are, in fact, where you don't have another piece of dough? So, im ein shom kayotze bo mahu. Let us say you don't have a similar piece, or another piece that was needed at the same time. What are you to do? So, Omar Rabbi Avol, Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish. Then you will establish kedei sheyelech odom mi migdal nunyo litverio meal. If the dough has been unattended, has been sitting around, in other words, whatever action was done, whatever kneading action was done to the dough has stopped for this amount of time, the amount of time to walk from migdal nunyo, that's the name of a place, to Tiberia, to that other place, Tiberia known as Tiberias, which is a meal. So the amount of time it takes to walk the distance of a meal is understood to be 2,000 amos, which translates more or less into the distance of a kilometer. So then the dough is considered chometz. The Gemara asks, v'neimo meal, why doesn't Rabbi Avol simply say, if it's been sitting around, a meal? The Gemara answers, Hokomashm, the fact that he spells it out as the amount of time to go from Migdal Nunya to Tveria, he is telling us the Shi'uro de meal, that the distance of a meal is Kmi Migdal Nunya V'Atver, if you don't know how much a meal is in distance. So just see the distance between Migdal Nunya and Tveria, and you will know what a meal is. At this point in the Gemara, we have a series of halachos we can say that the same shiur, the same distance, applies to three different areas of halacha. Now you'll notice we have a dashed triangle around Rabbi Avol, and the note on the side says Tama Kivkuv Dishonui B'machlokes im Rabbi Avol Omro. The issue is going to come up whether Rabbi Avol is the one that really reports the following list. So that's why we have him in a triangle, whereas we started off the Gemara with Rabbi Avol in a triangle. Here we have the dashed triangle, because it's not clear whether he really is the one that is reporting the following. The nosei, the topic heading that we have here, Rishimo shel halachos shetluyim b'shiur arba milim. We have a list of halachos that have in common this distance or time frame of four mil. So we read the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Legabel. Legabel has to do with kneading dough. And that's just a translation, but we'll see this in a moment by looking at Rashi, what it really means. That's legabel ulatfila, and with regard to halacha regarding davening, prayer, ulinatilas yodayim, halacha regarding the washing of hands, arba'o milin. The halacha is dependent on the distance of four mil. Again, that's quite vague at this point. We'll explain it by learning through the Rashi shortly. But before we get to the Rashi, just to finish off the idea of the names over here, Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Rav Nachman tells us, Ivo Omra v'arbo'o. Ivo, not Rabbi Avo, but Ivo, a different name, he is the one that said a list of halachas, and he says four halachas. V'arbo'o Omar bo, and he said four of them, namely the three we had, and he's going to add one. V'chado minayu, and one of them, meaning the fourth one, is ibud. Ibud has to do with a law regarding, literally has to do with tanning leather, and we'll explain what that means when we get to it later. But so far, what do we have in front of us? We have a list of 3-4 halachas that are dependent on this distance of four mil. Now, to increase the clarity, we look into Rashi on the first wide line. Rashi points out that the reason that this is here is because it's another statement made by Rabbi Avo quoting Reish Lakish. As you can see with our markings, that stands out quite clearly, that this second triangle, the dashed triangle, introduces Rabbi Avo quoting Reish Lakish, just like the opening of the Gemara had that. Now, what is legabel? So Rashi says, Hamegabel isa sachirim bischar, someone who is kneading dough for someone else, and he's getting paid for it. Uklibal habayis tameim, and the vessels of the one who hired him, they are tamei. Now, when you're dealing with dough and tumah, there is a concern that the dough should remain tohor so that you can then tithe the challah tithing, and the challah tithing will remain tohor as well. That is certainly a consideration. There might be other considerations as well. So here you have someone that's been hired to knead dough for the Baal HaBayis, but all of his vessels are tomei. So the halacha here says, Ad arba milin hetrichu chachomim leilech lemikveh litboil kelov. If there is a mikveh within four mil of where he has been hired to do the kneading, so the chachamim trouble him to go seek out a mikveh as long as it's within four mil. But more than that, we don't trouble him, and he'll end up kneading the dough, which will become tamei. V'chein litfila. Now Rashi's pshat is im mahalech odom baderech ubo es lolun ulhispalel. Person is walking on the road, and it's time for him to lie down, to go to sleep, and he also has to daven. He has to pray. Im yesh beis aknesis lefon of berichuk arba milim. If on his way there is a shul that is at a distance of four mil, holech mispalel sham v'lon sham, then he's expected to continue his journey another four mil and daven there and go to sleep there. V'chein l'netilas yodayim la'achila, regarding the washing of hands before eating bread. Im osu limso mayim l'fon of arba milim, holech l'sham v'notilas yodov. If he will find water for washing hands and within another four mil, and so then he's expected to hold off on eating till he goes another four mil on his journey and there will wash his hands. As we saw in the Gemara, Rav Nachman Yitzchok said that Ivo said over the list of halachas that are related to four mil, not Rabbi Avo. And Ivo quoted Reish Lakish and not Rabbi Avo. And he added a fourth halacha, and the fourth halacha was Ibud. Now, let's continue in the Gemara with the Tanaic source that you can see in a frame, Disnan. The Tanaic source features different kinds of skins of different types of animals that are considered soft. Because they're considered, it's called Ur HaRach. Rach means soft, pliable skin, and that kind of skin has the same din as the flesh of that creature. So And in many cases, the if you're dealing with a dead animal, so the flesh, the bosor, is metame. The flesh is a source of tumo. If the or is rach, so the or has the skin has the same din as the bosor. However, if the skin has been removed and it's gone through the leather making process, so it will lose its bosor status. Well, how much time must the skin be exposed to the leather making process? In this case, there's the leather making process has to do with the skins being trampled by people walking on it, and that's the beginning of the tanning process. It's called ibud ha'or. So the trampling on the skin will help to remove the skin from its flesh bosor status, and hence it will not be tome anymore. Now, let's see the source. It says, the kulan, all of them. All of them is a reference to the or harach, the soft type of skins that have the same halachic status as the flesh, she'ibdon, oy she'hilech bohen kidei ibuda, either they were tanned or they were trampled upon them enough time for establishing ibud. Ibud is the tanning process. Tahorin, so they will be torchutz me'or ha'odam, the exception being human skin. We won't get into that topic here. That's discussed in other masechtas, and you find its discussion in Maseches Chulin. The kamo kidei ibuda, when the source says that if it's walked upon, hilech is walked upon enough time to establish ibud, to establish it being tanned, it is tor. It loses its bosor status. Well, how much time is that? How much time would it have been to walked upon? Omar Rabbi Ivo, Omar Rabbi Yanai, kidei hiluch arbo'o milin. The amount of time here. The arba milin is not an actual distance, but it's a time, the amount of time to walk for meal. So that if you were to say that one meal is 18 minutes, just for argument's sake, so then 4 times 18, which would be 72 minutes, if it's been walked upon or trampled upon over the course of that amount of time, so it will not be metama anymore. Omar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, loy shonu. Now this is a qualification of that which was taught above. So Rashi directs the discussion to the issue of netilas yodayim and tefillah, to the issue of continuing on your journey to find water for washing your hands or for finding a shul in which to daven. This halacha is lo shonu elo lefonov. This is only with regard to the journey that you are on now and the chance of finding water or the shul is for meal ahead of the journey that you're going to be taking anyway. Avol la'achrof, but as far as backtracking is concerned, afilu meal eino choser, he is not expected to backtrack even one meal. So let's say, for example, a person knows that there is no shul or there's no water for meal ahead of him, but he knows that he passed a point that there was a shul or there was water for his netilas yadayim, but it was a meal in back of him. He'd have to backtrack. So Rabbi Yossi is telling us he is not expected to walk a meal, a kilometer, backtracking. Omer Rav Acha Umino. Now Rav Acha says we can infer from what Rabbi Yossi just said the following: Meal hu de'eno choser. He doesn't backtrack a full kilometer. Avo pochos mi meal choser, but almost a meal. If it's a question of 3/4 of a kilometer back, he will be expected to backtrack in order to find the water or to reach the water or the shul that he knows that he passed. And now we have a new Mishnah. This Mishnah deals with the issue of tithing or removing the challah tithe from dough on Pesach. And the issue that comes up over here is the fact that we're dealing with dough that became tomei. Dough that became tomei, so the challah tithe naturally is also tomei. And the challah tithe is a hunk of dough, a certain percentage of the dough, that is then would be given to the Kohen. However, if and in the fact that it's tomei prevents it from being eaten. You cannot eat it. It's also to eat challah that's tameo. So what is he to do? And if you're dealing with the situation as the Mishnah describes on Pesach itself, on the holiday itself, so there's another halacha that it's forbidden to burn truma or challah tameo. One is allowed to burn on Yom Tov. He's allowed to ignite fire for the purpose of Yom Tov. That's for the purpose of something that's food related or something that's litzorech Yom Tov, that has some kind of Yom Tov connection. However, elimination of truma or challah that's tameo has nothing to do with the benefit of Yom Tov. So that kind of burning is also prohibited. So there's no eating, there's no burning. And on the other hand, it's Pesach, so you have dough that is going to be chametz as well. So what? And being in possession of chametz is also a prohibition as far as Pesach is concerned. So that gives rise to the Mishnah's question of ketzad mafrishin chalo betulma biyontov. What is one to do with regard to dough that became tamei and it's Pesach? And as we said, it can't be eaten, it can't be burnt, and he is now confronting the problem with a chometz, with dough that once you remove the challah tied from it, that challah being that it's not going to be burnt, it's not going to be eaten, it's going to turn into chometz. So he's going to be in violation of Bayur Bayamotze. It should be pointed out that right now this fellow has dough that he's kneading. It happened to become tummy, but it's not chometz right now. So what is he to do? Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo tikro lo shem ad she te'ofe. Tikra lo shem is the designation of the tithe by calling it the name challah, that this is now designated. So what does Rabbi Elazar say? You know what? Hold off on the tithing. First, bake all of the dough. Once it's baked, so it's no longer going to become chametz. So once it's baked, then separate a part of that which you baked and designate it as the challah. So it can sit around. It's not chometz anymore, so you don't have any problem with it sitting around. True, it's not going to be eaten, you're not going to burn it, but it can sit around. There's no problem of chometz because it's already been baked. Ben Besera Omer, Tatil Vitzonein. He says, well, tithe it, but then put it into cold water. Put the dough, that will retard the fermentation process. And so when Cholamoid reaches, then you'll be able to burn it. Omar Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua takes a totally different take on this matter, and we now continue at the top of Omid Beis. Lo zehu chometz she muzharin olav bebayiro bayimotze. This challah, tithe that you have separated from the dough that will become chometz, is not the chometz that we are cautioned against or prohibited by the Torah in terms of the prohibition of bayiro bayimotze, the prohibition of being an owner of chometz. And why is that? Well, the Torah says lo yerai lecho. In other words, that which is yours, that which you own, is what you are prohibited from having. However, the challah tithe, at the point that you separate it, it's not yours, nor is it anyone else specifically. It's no one else's specifically either. Therefore, it's not something that the Torah warns against. So what does Rabbi Yeshua say? Elo, mafrishosa, you have your dough that's tummy right now, that you're kneading, so separate the challah tithe, the dough tithe, separate it, umanichosa, and leave it, set it aside, ad ho'erev, until the end of the Yom Tov, until the end of that, the Pesach day, and then burn it, v'im hichmitza chmitza, and if in the course of time it turns into chametz, so be it. It's not something you have to worry about, because it's not considered yours. Once you tithe it, it's not yours, so true, you can't eat it, the kohen cannot eat it, true, it cannot be burnt, but as far as the chametz problem is concerned, that is not something to bother us either. So, as far as what we have learned in the Mishnah, we saw three different ways of dealing with the tomei dough and the challah tithe. Rabbi Elazar says, first bake it, therefore, thereby avoiding all chametz problems. Ben Becerra says, on a practical basis, you can arrest the chametz problem through simply putting it in cold water. And Rabbi Yeshua says, conduct yourself as you would any other day. Knead the dough, separate the challah tithe as dough, and there is no chametz problem either. The Gemara raises a question as to how to analyze the machlokes tanoim that we just saw. The Tanakama, there's Rabbi Lezer that we saw in the Mishnah, he is concerned with the chometz problem. He says there is a chometz problem, and we have to get around that. Rabbi Yeshua says there is no chometz problem from the very beginning. At the very root of this particular issue, there is no chometz problem. So on the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and you'll notice in the Gemara there are also numbers 1 and 2. They represent two shlavim, two stages, kedei lahasbir machlokes Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yeshua, b'afroshes challah, b'pesach me'isa tameya, regarding the tithing of the challah, dough tithe on Pesach, from a dough that became tomei. The Gemara, leimo v'toivas hano komiflagi. Let us say that their machlokes concerns an entity or a concept known as Toivas Hanoa. So before we go into the Gemara whatsoever, let us look at Rashi, who describes quite elaborately what Toivas Hanoa means. So Rashi says on the third line from the top, Toivas Hanoa, Dovor Muat, it's a small amount of value, as we will see. The Sanya Rasho Yisrael Loma Lechavero, a Yisrael, in the case of the term Yisrael here, it means a non-Kohen. A non-Kohen can approach his friend and say, Heloch Sela, take this coin, Sela is the name of a coin, V'tein kol trumosecho leben biti Kohen, and give all of your truma tithes, in other words, I want you to direct your truma tithes to my grandson. You see, my daughter married a Kohen, and hence the non-Kohen status is established by one's father. So my grandson, who is such because my daughter married a Kohen, I want him, my grandson, the Kohen, to receive your tithes. So as far as what the quantity of truma is in this case, could be a truckload as far as we're concerned. In order for the grandson to get this, what happened? The grandfather gave the farmer, he gave him a coin, a sela, which is worth quite a bit less than the value of the truma that the fellow's grandson is going to receive. When we speak then about a Yisrael being in possession of the challah, he, the owner of the challah, dough, can give it to any kohen he wants. And included in this is the possibility of his receiving a coin, receiving payment to give it to someone else's Kohen friend. So that once again, the owner of the tithe, he can't eat the tithe itself. It doesn't have food value to him, but there's the potential value that's in this, i.e. the price or the payment he would receive from someone who would want him to direct the tithe to a specific Kohen friend of his or relative of his. So is that considered, is that Toivas Hanoa, this potential payment, is that considered an actual value? And this concept of an actual value will then translate itself into being, is it considered my possession or not, because I have potential value in it. Does that make the item, in this case the challah, or as we saw in Rashi, the truma, is it considered mine? So now we go back to the Gemara. The suggestion right now is that this issue of how to classify Toivas Hanoa, is Toivas Hanoa considered mamon, is it considered an actual value or not, is the basis of the machlokas. The Rabbi Eliezer, Savar Rabbi Eliezer, who was the one that said, you got to bake it beforehand, because otherwise it'll become chometz. If you don't bake it ahead of time, the chal become chometz, and then you will be in violation of chometz that you own. Well, he then seems to hold Toivas Hanoa Mamon, that this potential value in in the tithe that he, namely the payment he could receive from someone to direct the tithe to a particular, to a specific coin, that's considered a true value. And if that's the case, so it's considered as if it's something he owns, and if it becomes chometz, then he will be in violation of Bayiro, Bayimotze. And that's why Rebbe Elazar said you must take preemptive actions of baking it first. Don't allow it to become chometz, because otherwise you'll be in violation of Bayir Bayimotze. But Rabbi Yeshua Sovar, Rabbi Yeshua didn't seem to be concerned whatsoever. He said, leave it around. It can become chometz. It's not yours anyway. It must be. He holds Toivas Hano Eino Mamon. The fact that there's a potential payment you could receive for this challah to direct it to someone, so that's considered, it's too abstract, if you will, and therefore it's not considered a real value, and it's therefore, that doesn't make it considered as if it's something that you own. The Gemara rejects this law. That's not the analysis. The Kulei Alma Savri, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, everyone will agree, Toivas Hano, Eino Mamoin. That potential value doesn't make it considered mamon, an actual possession of yours, an actual possession of value. If that's the case, then why is Rebbe Elazar so machmir? Why is he insisting on taking the preemptive baking action? V'hocha b'hoil komifligi. Hoil is a very short expression, but it introduces a very long sugya. Hoil has to do with potential, or since. How does that express itself over here? So the Gemara says, "Vaho v'hoyul komiflegi." The Rebbe Elazar Sovar, Rebbe Elazar, who was concerned with the chometz phenomenon, in this case, the challah is going to become chometz, and you're going to be left with it, so you've got to bake it ahead of time. So Rebbe Elazar Sovar, Amrinon, we say as follows. Hoyo vi boi ichu alo mamone hu. Since the owner of this dough, even after he tithes it, even after he separates the challah from it, and as we said a moment ago, true, it's not as challah, it has no real value to you. However, ichu comes from the word shoel. Shoel is an expression that you find in the context of vows or dedications. You can undo the dedication. You could approach a sage, a chacham, and say that you regret having tithed it as challah, and that will then revert it back into non-challah, meaning it will revert it back into being your dough. So then it's yours. So since the potential exists for undoing the tithed status, that potential is a reality in the mind of Rebbe Eliezer, and therefore it's considered as if it is yours right now. Rebbe Yeshua Sovar lo aminon hoyel. Rebbe Yeshua says, no, we don't look at all that potential business, but rather once it's tithed and you tithed it immediately before it became chometz, when it becomes chometz, it is not yours. And as we said before, the issue of Toivas Hano, that's Toivas Hano Eino Mamon. Before we go further into the Gemara, let us take a look at Rashi. Rashi gives quite a bit of background and adds a lot to this particular sukya. Across from here, Rashi says, Lo dekuleyamo Toivas Hano Eino Mamon. Ubehoyul komithugi. Rebbe Elazar Sovar. Ovar Olei. Rabbi Lezer says that if once you tithe the challah dough, tithe, and it becomes chometz, you still will be in violation of Bayiro Bayimotze. Why? Mishum hoyil viboy mitchel alah, since in potential you could undo the tithing, you could undo the tithed status, v'hodru l'tivla, it will then revert to its tevel. Tevel is an expression referring to that which was untithed, reverts to its tevel status, the day, and it's therefore considered yours. And as such, once it's considered yours, then you are in violation of Bayiro, Bayimotze. The Torah warns against your ownership of chametz. The alkol neder vehegdishu truma hakodosh bamiras pet, whether it be a vow, a sanctification, or a truma tithe, that whatever it is, each one of these gains their elevated status through speech. You can approach a chacham. This halacha is most common with the absolution of vows in the context of Hatoras Nedorim. That's the first of the three items just listed the line above in Rashi. So each one of these is like that, like the Nedorim. You can undo it by approaching a sage, Valakur Diburim, and uproot the speech that you made, the elevation or the dedication speech. Hilkoch Mamone Hu the Ovarole, and therefore it's considered yours and you will be in violation. Umalecha Safionami Biontov, as far as the baking on Yom Tov, ki lo koro ola shem, as long as you haven't dedicated it, you haven't declared it as challah, and this is as far as Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, he said, first bake the dough that you have. Bake it before you dedicate it, before you were kore shem. The afagav, the iko chado de lo chazio, even though there is one part of the dough that is really not fit, because after you bake it, you're going to have to remove, you're going to have to separate one of the loaves or one part of the dough, you're going to have to separate it as challah. Nevertheless, mishtira, it's still allowed. You can bake all of it. The cholchada v'chada, each loaf that you're baking in its untithed state, iko lememar, you can say regarding any one given loaf that you baked before you tithed it, as ho lav chalohi, this loaf is not the chaloh loaf, this is not the loaf that's going to be the tithed loaf. The inami kora ole shem, even if you did proclaim it as chaloh, motzi lemefalo, even if you proclaimed it as chaloh before you baked it, it can still be baked. Hoyo the iboy mitchell Allah, since you can also undo the challah status. Mihu kivon to islay the Rebbe Elazar hasal mitzarf in the challah. However, since Rebbe Elazar holds that by placing all of the baked untithed loaves, the batter was untithed, you bake them as separate loaves, but you can then put them in a sal, in a basket, a vessel that will join them all together l'challah. They'll join all of them together to be like one hunk of untithed matter. Hochi shapir tvei. This is better. Sheteofe trilo. First bake them before tithing. Mishum revocha de milsa. It's revocha means more added. There's more heter. There's more room for leniency over here, as we described before, because any given loaf isn't necessarily the challah loaf. V'cholkamo de'efshel mevet shapir below shum hoyo nichol mevadav. The more that you can do without coming on to this hoil analysis, the better it is. And in this case, it manifests itself in the suggestion, first bake the loaves and then make the tithing, as opposed to first tithing in order to allow the baking after one of the loaves has been dedicated in its dough form as challah. At that point, you're then going to have to resort to the hoil uboy l'mitshal analysis, and that's kind of like we'll call it stretching things a bit. So better to first bake all the loaves before declaring any one of them as challah. Let's now turn back to the Gemara. As you can see, we have an unusual marking. We call this the firebox marking, and the star indicates this firebox is mesamein shemitchila matchila kan sugya aruka. At this point, we're going to we're beginning a very long sugya. In other words, it's so long that in the context of our daf yomi presentation, we're not going to be able to finish this sugya today's shiur. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we indicate that this goes ad mem ches, until daf mem ches. It's a very long sugya, and we can entitle it ho'il. It's true, we just mentioned ho'il before in the context of the potential for absolving a vow. This is a different kind of ho'il, and we look in our introduction, ha'oifa miyom tov l'choil, someone who is baking from Yom Tov, which is Yom Tov is a holy day, as we're familiar with it in terms of Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah. These are days that are similar to Shabbos in the sense that most melachos are prohibited. However, food-related melachos, in this case we'll speak about baking and cooking on Yom Tov. However, here we're going to be dealing with a person that's baking on Yom Tov, however, not for the purpose of Yom Tov. He's baking on Yom Tov for chol, for after Yom Tov, for a weekday. Well, it's certainly not a right thing to do. That's not the way you properly observe Yom Tov. However, the question is a person like that going to be subject to lashing or not? That's a machlokes rab over Rav Chisda I loke. Is he going to get malchus? Now, as we mentioned a moment ago, Yom Tov is prohibited in malachos. In other words, one is not allowed to sew on Yom Tov. One is not allowed to draw or to write on Yom Tov. And if one does, he's in violation of a negative command. The Torah prohibits doing malachos on Yom Tov. And in our case, even though we're dealing with a food-related malacha, specifically baking and cooking, which if you were doing it for Yom Tov itself, it's perfectly all right. Here he is doing it with a wrongful intention. He's baking on Yom Tov for a weekday. As such, maybe it's going to be considered no different than writing or sewing or planting or whatever. There are 39 malachos that one concerns himself with when discussing Shabbos and Yom Tov. So we continue in the Gemara. Ho'efe mi Yom Tov l'chol. Rav Chisda Omar Loike, one who bakes on Yom Tov, after he finished eating his Yom Tov meal, after he's finished and he's satisfied, and it doesn't look like he's going to be eating any more on Yom Tov, and he continues then baking on Yom Tov for the weekday, Rav Chisda Omar Loike, he is deserving, he warrants receiving lashing because he was in violation of the negative command of the Torah, lo sase kol melacha. For the violation of negative commands, the Torah imposes a lashing penalty, lashing punishment. Rabbo Omar eino loike. Rabbo says no, he does not deserve malchus. Rav Chisda Omar loike, and why is that? And here it's interesting, the Gemara presents the svara in the negative. He says, lo amrinon, we don't say the following. In other words, the following statement is something that would have been an explanation for him to get out of the malchus. Nevertheless, Rav Chisda says, we're not going to say the following. What is that? Hoyu umikloi le orchim chozile. Since orchim are guests, mikloi means arrive. Since guests could potentially arrive on Yom Tov, and I'd be baking, albeit not for myself, but for my guests. And as a result of that, chozile, it's fit. So that, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, he doesn't look at the potential. Remember how before we looked at the word hoyel and we said it represents something that that manifests potential, represents potential. Rav Chisda doesn't look at that. In other words, if you knew, for example, that you are definitely going to have guests arriving, you know, it's true, you finished your meal and guests are on their way, you are allowed to bake on Yom Tov for your guests. However, we're not talking about a person that knows he has guests that are on their way. We're talking about someone who finished his eating for that day, and he's satisfied. It's clear to us he's not going to be baking for any more eating. Potentially, people could knock on the door. Rav Chisda says, we don't look at that. We don't reckon with that potential, and therefore we look at things as they are. Right now, he finished eating. There are no guests, to the best of his knowledge, that are on their way. Therefore, he is baking purely for after Yom Tov, and that is forbidden. Rabbo Omar eino loke. Rabbo says he does not deserve the lashing punishment. Amrinan, why is that? Because we say ho'il, because of this. Potential guests might show up, so that his baking isn't definitely for the chol. His baking could very well be for a Yom Tov purpose. Omar le Rabbo le Rav Chisda. Rabbo, who represents leniency in this particular instance, Rabbo says we do look at the potential. So Rabbo says to Rav Chisda, "Lidchol diamris lo yamrinan hoyol." You who deny the ho'il explanation, Heich ofim miyom tov l'shabbos. How do you explain the well-known, the common practice of people baking on Yom Tov for the next day, in the event that the next day happens to be Shabbos? So that if Yom Tov comes out on a Friday, and the next day is Shabbos, it's known that people bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Omar Le Rav Chista answers, Mishum Eruve Tavshilin. Because of the practice, I would almost call it the ritual, of setting aside the Eruve Tavshilin. The Eruve Tavshilin is commonly known as one who sets aside some baked item and some cooked item on Erev Yom Tov. He sets it aside, or he bakes something and cooks up something before Yom Tov, and says that this is my Eruv Tavshilin. And the common practice is that would then be eaten on Shabbos. So he sets it aside, the Eruv Tavshilin, on Erev Yom Tov, let's say on Thursday, before Thursday night sets in, Thursday leading into Friday. So on Thursday afternoon, he sets aside the food designated or labeled as a Ruve Tavshilin, and that will allow him to bake on Friday for Shabbos. So Rava asks, Umishume Ruve Tavshilin Sharino Nisura Doraisa, because of this ritual, if you will, we're going to relax and permit a Torah violation. We just said before that, well, baking from Yom Tov to Chol, that's a violation of Lo Sase Kol Melacha. You're not allowed to do melachas that are not Yom Tov related. You're not allowed to do them. Just because he set aside this food called Eruv Tavshilin, we're going to relax that Torah violation? Omar Le, Rav Chista answers. He says to Rabbi, he says, you got it all wrong. In other words, what you just did in raising your question is you paralleled the case of Friday Yom Tov leading into Shabbos to Yom Tov leading into a weekday, a common weekday. He says, that's your mistake. He says, Mido Raisa Tzorche Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. From the Torah's perspective, Shabbos and Yom Tov, or you say Yom Tov leading into Shabbos, is one continuum of sanctity. What in Hebrew we call this, or in Aramaic it's called Chada Kedusha. It's one unit of sanctity, because as far as the Torah is concerned, Yom Tov as well as Shabbos are referred to by the term Shabbos, a day of cessation. Shabbos has to do with ceasing from being occupied with creative, constructive activity. Both have that in common. So they're considered one continuum, one long day, if you will. And as such, I'm not really preparing from one day or one entity to another entity. It's one long day as far as the halacha is concerned. And that is expressed by the Gemara, by Rav Chista, saying Tzorche Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. The needs of Shabbos can be done on Yom Tov as far as the Torah itself is concerned. V'Rabbonon hu deGozru beGezeiro. The Rabbonon said that if you don't make an Eruv Tavshilin, if you don't do anything, if you don't go through that ritual, so the Rabbonon impose the following restriction and say, don't bake on Yom Tov for Shabbos. Gezeiro Shemo Yomru Ofen Yom Tov Af L'Chol. People can get the wrong impression that you can bake on Yom Tov even for a weekday. Because the masses, without going through the Erev Tavshilin, view Yom Tov as one day and Shabbos as another day, and they'll think, well, just like you can bake from Yom Tov to Shabbos, you can bake from Yom Tov l'chol. The Kevan Datz Ruchu Rabbonin Eruv Tavshilin, since the Rabbonin imposed the need for preparing the Eruv Tavshilin, Is Le Hekero. That creates a recognition in the minds of people that Shabbos is in fact different than a weekday. So therefore, trying to question my stringency with regard to Yom Tov L'chol from the case of Yom Tov to Shabbos, Rav Chista says, is simply unfounded. Esfei, And now we see a marking, a new marking, a triangle marking, and under our structural note on the side where we have the Mivneh, we also note that this Mivneh will last till Mem Zayin Omid Beis. In other words, you will see triangles in varying directions, point up, point down, up till Mem Zayin Omid Beis. As we said before, it just goes to show how this is a very long sugya, even as far as the structure, the give and take nature of the structure will overflow beyond the realm of today's particular shiur. But hopefully we'll be able to get back into things with regard to the next shiur as well. But in the meantime, we're looking at our Mivneh. The point facing up represents, in this case you'll see three Kushos al Rafisa. So if you scan ahead, and you'll notice that on this Omid you see two triangles with their point facing up, and on Mem Zayin Omid Aleph, in the middle of the Omid, you'll see another triangle in that direction. As far as the lower part of Mem Zayin Omid Aleph, then you'll see the inverted triangle. And now, in our structural note here, we indicate two Kushos al Rabo, so that you'll have, on, as we say, at the lower part of Mem Zayin Omid Aleph, a question challenging Rabo, and another question appears on Mem Zayin Omid Beis, about a third of the way down at the end of the line, another inverted triangle. And those are questions challenging Rabo's theory or explanation of Ho'il. So now let's start the first question. And the question is, we have a long question marking as well, as is marked. Eisveit, Rabo challenges Rav Chisda. Behema hamesukenes. This is an animal that is deathly ill, and you have it on Yom Tov. And if the animal drops dead, it'll be worth very little to you, being that it's nevela. However, if you slaughter it before it drops dead, it's kosher, as long as it's not a trefa, as long as it doesn't have a particular organ deficiency. Might just be just very old and sickly, but it's, as far as trefa is concerned, it's not a trefa. And if you shecht it, you slaughter it before it drops dead, so that's a big savings for you. You'll then be able to eat the meat. Behema mesukenes lo yishchoit. You shall not slaughter it on Yom Tov. Elo kedeshi yachol lechol heimeno kezayas tzli mibaod yom. Unless you have enough time to eat an olive quantity of roasted meat mibaod yom while it's still Yom Tov. Now, Rabba infers from this, yochol le'echol afagav de lo boi le'mechal. All that's required is that you have the potential. There's enough time. It's only a time factor, that there's enough time left between where you are right now and the end of Yom Tov, enough time to slaughter it and prepare it for eating. That's all that's required. But your actual need to eat from it is not required. Once again, yochol le'echol afagav de lo boi le'mechal. So now what's going on here? You're slaughtering the animal, in effect, to save money, to save the value of the animal from becoming an avela. And that's all you're doing. Are you going to eat from it? No, you're not going to eat from it. That's what we just inferred. You're not necessarily going to be eating from it. So are you not doing here a malacha? By the way, we should note that if in the middle of Yom Tov day, if you don't have any meat and you're at Yom Tov noon time and you need meat, you're allowed to slaughter. Just like we said, you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to bake. Food preparation malachas are allowed to be done on Yom Tov. However, here in this case, you're doing the act of shechita. It's a malacha, and you're not going to be eating from it, and yet it's allowed. How do you explain that? Bishlamo lididi, Rabo says, according to me, this can make sense. According to me, the Amri, that we say ho'il, the idea of looking at the potential, ho'il, vi'i bo'i lemechal motzi ochil, since there's enough time for him to slaughter and roast it, that if he should want to eat it, he would be able to. There's enough time between now and the end of Yom Tov for all that to be accomplished. Mishem Hachi Yishcho, therefore, we're allowing him to slaughter, which slaughtering, as we say, is a malacha. But and since there's the potential connection between his slaughtering and his actual eating, I emphasize here the potential for his eating, that's enough. And that's, of course, because we subscribe, says Rabba, to the concept of hoil. But according to you, Rav Chisda, that deny the hoil explanation, Amai Yishot, why is he allowed to slaughter? Rav Chisda doesn't look at the potential. And if, as we inferred, here we're talking about a person that's not going to be eating from it, so why is he allowed to slaughter it? He's not doing the slaughtering for Yom Tov purposes. He's basically doing slaughter to save money, but not to save himself from a loss, but he's not doing it for Yom Tov eating purposes. Omar Lei, Rav Chisda says, Mishum Hefsid Mamoinoi. Now this is a very odd response, but don't jump to any conclusions. Translation is, well, we allow him because he is saving himself from a financial loss. So Rabba asks, where have we ever heard of such a thing, that because of financial loss will allow someone to violate a Torah violation? That's unheard of. If the Torah says you are prohibited in doing something, in all due respect to the importance of money and one's possessions, we do not allow, for the sake of saving money, one to violate an outright Torah prohibition. Amalei, so Rav Chisda answers. Now here, be very careful. Don't jump to any translation conclusions. It's kind of you have to understand this answer, as the Gemara says, in, yes, Mishum Hefsid Mamono, he says, yes, because of Hefsid Mamon, not because of Hefsid Mamon. Don't misread this to think, yes, because of Hefsid Mamon we allow an Iser Doraisa. That's not the point. He says, because of the Hefsid Mamon, because of the financial loss that's confronting him right now, Gomar Bolibo Lechol Kezayis, he makes himself, he concludes, I am really hungry. It's kind of almost room for a little bit of sarcasm over here, but being all that aside, because he's confronted with this big financial loss, he's going to make himself hungry. He's going to conclude, I all of a sudden become hungry, and he will actually want. This is we'll call this the ultimate hunger inducer. He will actually want to eat a small amount, albeit of flesh, of meat, an olive quantity of meat. The Efshel, because I suppose below Shechita, and you can't have an olive quantity of meat without doing the Shechita. So, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, you're not dealing with anything that has to do with a potential, since he could want to eat it. He is going to definitely want to eat it. He's confronting the loss of this animal. It could be a loss worth thousands of dollars if it's a large cow, so it's worth a lot of money. And he's staring at this loss, even though he's quite full. All of a sudden, he's going to get a little bit hungry for that little piece of meat, which will be his ticket to financial redemption, if you will. The Gemara continues with another question. Eisve, Rabbo raises his objection. Lechem haponim, ne'echal, letisho, lasor, lachadosor. Lechem haponim is what's known as the shoe breads. They were loaves that were placed in the Beis HaMikdash and left on the golden table, the Shulchan Azov, in the Hechal of the Beis HaMikdash. They were placed on there on Shabbos and left there for a week till the next Shabbos, the week later. When were these loaves baked? So under normal circumstances, these loaves were baked on a Friday, placed on the table on Shabbos, and the previous weeks were removed and distributed to the Kohanim that were in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos, so that from the time of their baking till they're actually being eaten, if you count both days, the day of baking and the day of their actual eating, we'll call that counting them in an inclusive fashion, you will find that they will be eaten 9 days after they were baked. And there were miracles in the Beis Hamikdash. The bread remained fresh, even though it sat there in the open for 1 week. Let's leave that aside for right now. But that was the case. So the source says, the lechem aponim were ne'echal letisha, lasoro, lachadosor, lo pochus v'liyoser. Sometimes 9 days between the baking and the eating, sometimes 10, and sometimes 11. No less. In other words, you'll have no less than 9 days and no more than 11 days. Ketzad. Well, how do you figure that? So kedarko letisha, in the normal circumstances, 9 days. Nefe be'erev Shabbos, they were baked on Friday, ne'echal b'Shabbos, and eaten next week's Shabbos. Letisha, that counts for 9 days. Chal yontov lios be'erev Shabbos, if on Friday, which is the normal baking of the baking day for lechem aponim, but if that happened to be a yontov, so chal yos yontov be'erev Shabbos, ne'echal l'Shabbos l'asor, it'll then be eaten then on next week's Shabbos, which is actually a lapse of 10 days. In other words, in that case, they will have been baked on, not on Friday, but on Thursday. And if you count from Thursday till Shabbos of next week, you'll see when you're counting in an inclusive fashion, you'll reach 10. Let us say that preceding Shabbos are Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah come out. That means Thursday and Friday are Rosh Hashanah. So I'm not going to be baking on Rosh Hashanah either. Nechal Shabbos, it'll be eaten next week, Shabbos Lachad Osor. That will be a lapse of 11 days. If you count from Wednesday till next week Shabbos, you'll reach 11 days. The baking of the Lechem Aponim does not supersede Shabbos nor Yom Tov. Now, the heart of the question. We didn't point out earlier, but the double underlining that we're using is the point at which the Gemara's the climax of the question is reached. The I Amris Tzorche Shabbos Nasin Biyontov. This happened to be Rav Chisda's explanation that we saw back on Mem Vov Omid Beis. We have a little arrow here to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, and that reflects back to Rav Chisda's explanation. So Rabbo is asking, if we're going to accept your explanation of Tzorche Shabbos, Nas and Yom Tov, Shabbos needs can be done on Yom Tov, Amai Lo Dochi Yom Tov. Why does this source say that the Lechem Aponim, which is clearly a Shabbos need, that it is not to be baked on Yom Tov? Omar Le, so Rav Chisda answers, Shvus Krova Hitiru, Shvus Rechika Lo Hitiru. When the Shvus is a reference to prohibited malachas, and hitiru means we allow that which otherwise would be prohibited, in this case the baking. If it's krova, if it has an immediate nature to it, in other words, from where Shabbos follows immediately the Yom Tov in question, so then we say that the needs of Shabbos that are krova, where it's immediately after the Yom Tov hitiru, we allow you to do that on Yom Tov. However, in this case, we're talking about the baking of the lechem aponim on Yom Tov for when? For Shabbos a week later, that's rechoka, that's far away, lo hitiru, that we do not allow. Ulreb Shimon ben Gamliel, now the diamond you could see we're using here to emphasize the name of Shimon Leo, because he appears as a question on two occasions here and later on as well. So we ask, according to the Tana, Reb Shimon Leo, to Omar, Mishum, Rabbi Shimon ben Hasgan, Reb Shimon Leo quotes Rabbi Shimon ben the son of the Skan, he says, who holds Doche es Yom Tov, the Eino Doche es Yom Tzom, my Iko Lameimar, according to this opinion, that the Tzorche Shabbos are doche yom tov, but they are not doche es yom tzom. In other words, if you have Shabbos, which is preceded by yom tov, you can do things, do malachas on yom tov that are of a Shabbos necessity. However, not in the case that yom kippur, yom tzom is a reference to yom kippur, not in the case where yom kippur comes out on a Friday, then we don't allow you to do Shabbos needs on Yom Kippur. So, my Iko Lameimar, how are you going to explain the issue or the method of preparing the Lechem Haponim? So Rav Chisda will tell you, Bahal Pligi, this in fact is the machlokis, the heart of the machlokis between Rav Shimon Liel and the Chachomim, the previous mentioned opinion. Mar Sovar, Shvus Krova Etiru, Shvus Rechoka Lo Etiru, the source above that said that you have, you're going to have a gap of when Yom Tov comes out before Shabbos, you're going to have a gap of 10 days, that is because Shvus Ruchoka Lo Etiru, and Umor Sover, according to Rav Shimon Liel, Shvus Ruchoka Nami Etiru, he would differ and say that you could bake on Yom Tov that precedes Shabbos. You can bake the lechem upon them, even though they're going to be used, they're going to be eaten a week later. Only in the case that Friday happens to be Yom Kippur, then we wouldn't allow the baking of the lechem upon them for Shabbos a week later. Even though we're kind of like over, we're spilling over our Daf Yomi quota, but the next question is so similar to the one we just learned that it's worth our while to continue, being that we're in the same mode of thinking. Mosiv Rav Mori. And again, you have a long question marking. Rav Mori raises a question on Rav Chisda. Once again, the question here, you'll see from the double underline, if you skip a little bit later, you see the issue of Tzorchei Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov is going to be brought into question. So Rav Mori raised a question concerning the Shtei HaLechem. The Shtei HaLechem, literally two loaves, they were brought on the holiday of Shavuos. They were brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Shtei HaLechem, Einon Ne'echolos, Lo pochos mishnayim v'lo yoser al shlosha. Ketzah. This construction is very similar to the din concerning the lechem aponim that we just learned. However, a much shorter time frame. He says that you will find that they are eaten not less than 2 days, nor more than 3 days from their baking. Again, the counting is inclusive. So that nefos erev yom tov, if you have Shavuos coming out in the middle of the week, so they'll be baked on Erev Shavuos, Erev Yom Tov, Necholos LeYom Tov, Lishnayim. So you count the day that they're baked, Erev Yom Tov, and then the holiday itself, when they're eaten by the Kohanim, that's 2 days. Chal Yom Tov Lios Achar HaShabbos. Let's say Shavuos comes out on a Sunday. So when are they going to be baked? Well, Necholos LeYom Tov Lishlosha. They're going to be baked not on Shabbos, they'll be baked Erev Shabbos, and then eaten on Sunday, which is Shavuos. L'fisha eino doicha loy es haShabbos v'lo es haYom Tov. The baking cannot be done on Shabbos, and the baking cannot be done on Yom Tov. Now, here when we say the baking cannot be done on Yom Tov, here we're talking about the standard Lechem Shtei HaLechem, which were baked on Erev Yom Tov for Yom Tov. So this presents a major question on Rav Chisda. V'i Amris Tzorchei Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. If you will say that you can bake on Yom Tov for another day, for Shabbos that follows it, Hashto de Shabbos B'Yom Tov Shori. Mind you, we're allowing your baking on Yom Tov for Shabbos, albeit it's Shabbos, but it's another day. So we're allowing you baking on Yom Tov for another day. The Yom Tov B'Yom Tov Mibaya, should there be any problem with baking on Yom Tov for Yom Tov itself? Why in the world should you not be able to bake the Shtei HaLechem, which is a Shavuos food? It's the two loaves were eaten on Shavuos by the Kohanim. Why should you not be allowed to bake a Shavuos food on Shavuos, on the holiday itself, for itself? So there must be we must be bringing into question this whole the concept of Tzorchei Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. Because if that were really allowed, then there should be no problem in baking the Shtei HaLechem on Shavuos itself for itself. So the Gemara, Rav Chisda will answer, Shaini Hosam, the case of the Shtei HaLechem is different. Yomar Kro Lochem. The Torah says that the baking, or the cooking that you're allowed to do, is provided that it is for your personal needs. And the word lochem is an exclusionary expression, lochem v'lo l'gavoah, for your needs, but not for heavenly needs. Now, the Shtei HaLechem were a form of they were sanctified. I almost call them a form of sacrifice, even though they weren't put on the altar, but nevertheless they are gavoah, they are heavenly based. So that the Torah's allowance is for your personal needs, not malachas that are done la gavoah. So that the baking of the loaves, which is baking for a gavoah purpose, is not something that is allowed. Ulu Reb Shimon, the Amar Mishum Reb Shimon ben Askan doiches a Yom Tov, that baking on Yom Tov is we saw before, for example, by the preparation of the lechem aponim, that it's doiches Yom Tov. So my ikol lemeimar. How are you going to explain over here the shtei lechem? So the Gemara answers, in fact, Sovar lo ka'aba shol. In other words, the question is, what about the lochem drasha? According to Reb Shimon Gamliel, that says that that we are doicha yom tov, that the shtei lechem would be doicha yom tov, that you could bake the shtei lechem on the holiday itself. So what about the drasha of lochem? So how are you going to explain that, where lochem seemed to be exclusionary? So the Gemara answers, Sovar lo ka'aba shol. Rav Shimon Gamliel will hold like Abba Shaul's approach to the word lochem. Tomar lochem means lochem v'lo l'nochrim. The only thing that the Torah excludes by lochem is baking or cooking for non-Jews. However, gavoa is not excluded. As we said earlier, and you can see clearly by way of the markings, we're in the middle of a sugya. Till now we raised three questions against Rav Chisda's approach, and as you can see, the inverted triangle, tables turn, and the Gemara will be presenting questions on Rabbah's approach. But being that we're in the context of a Daf Yomi Shir, and we've already spilled over quite a bit, this would be a convenient place to stop. But before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shi'ur for today.